the Lord changed the message. That makes it sort of difficult for me, but nevertheless, I've got to do as I'm told. I had this other, what I believed to be a very thrilling, wonderful message, all carved out neatly, worked at it all week. The Lord knoweth thy walking through this great wilderness. But the Lord hath changed that. And I've just got to do as I'm told. I preached twice yesterday at Cumber. I gave the charge to the pastor, the new pastor at that lovely little church at Cumber, and then after a moment or two I gave the charge to the church at Cumber, and two meetings just a moment or two between makes a bit of a busy day, and then I went on to Kilkeel and finished the conference for them there. I didn't think I'd be able to do that. And then I came home and fell asleep, just like that. And then I wakened about 4. And then the Lord began to talk to me. So I've got to go on with the Lord's business. Like to thank you for praying for me. I'm coming round. And although they have my death dated around here, I don't think I'm keeping the date. Yes. Thank you very much. We're at the prophecy of Hosea this morning. The prophecy of Hosea. And we're at the first chapter to begin with. The prophecy of Hosea. Now take your time and find the place. Isaiah, then Lamentation, then Ezekiel, and then Daniel, and then Hosea. And you'll get it all right. One of the minor prophets, and the first of the minor prophets. And we're at the first chapter and reading the first verse. The word of the Lord that came unto Hosea, the son of Beeri, in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Take your time and look at that phrase. That's when he lived and preached. This was the period when the prophet appeared. In the days of Uzziah, you remember him, and Jotham, and Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, these were 4 kings. And they reigned, one after the other, over what was then called Judah. You see, the people of God had divided into 2 camps, into 2 kingdoms, if you like. And Benjamin and Judah stood together. And they had kings of their own, and 4 kings had reigned here, and Hosea was the prophet during that period. And it also says in this first verse that not only did he reign in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah, but in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. You see, this fellow Jeroboam, he took the throne from Rehoboam. Rehoboam was the son of Solomon. And when he came to the throne, Jeroboam rebelled and took the kingdom, and 10 tribes followed him. And they were usually called Israel from that moment forward. So that the people of God were divided into 2 camps, or 2 kingdoms, if you like. Sometimes the southern kingdom was called Judah, and the northern kingdom with 10 tribes, they were called Israel. But the prophet Hosea could cross the border and bring messages from God to all and sundry in the land. Now, that's the period when the prophet preached. And you know, it's always a very difficult period for a preacher when the camp is divided. Thank God we're not divided like that. You see, if you preach to some place where they have sort of two parties in the place, and that happens in a lot of places. You see, if you're exhorting, or if you're rebuking with all the power of God behind you, then the crowd on that side of the fence, they'll smile and say, well, that's for the other boys. Well, bless God for that. But at the same time, the other boys on the other side are smiling and say, bless God, that's for the other boys. And so you're not getting on very well like this. It's a very difficult situation for the preacher. And that's where Hosea found himself. He was preaching to God's people when they were divided among themselves. But it's a little bit more tougher than that, because you can see a picture of the people that they preached to. Let me just paint the picture quickly. This is not what's in my mind, but this is the proper lead up to it. Look at chapter 4, please. And we're at the prophecy of Hosea, and we're at the 4th chapter. And listen to this word. The prophet is speaking and saying, hear the word of the Lord, ye children of Israel. For the Lord hath a controversy with the inhabitants of the land. And he's not just thinking about the 10 tribes on the north or the 2 tribes on the south. He's talking about the inhabitants of the land. He's talking to all the people of God. So there's no getting out of this. Even if there were a division of some kind, the border goes now. Because this is the word of the Lord to all the inhabitants of the land. And God is having a controversy with them because there is no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. I remember an old modernist arguing with me once, and he said, I can show you verses in this book that cannot be true. I said, indeed you cannot. You just turn them up and I'll explain them to you. And this is one of the ones he turned up. He said, you know, it would be impossible for Israel, the 12 tribes, to be in the land of promise and not know something about God. And it says here, there is no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. And he thought he had some smart aleck. And I said, you know, you're missing a wee thing. You know, there's all the difference in the world between knowing about God and knowing God. They didn't know their God. There was no knowledge of God in that sense. Oh no, they didn't know their God. And you know, this is what Paul craved for every day. He prayed, it seems, every morning that he'll sacrifice everything that I may know him. I need to know the Lord today. And I need to know him at my elbow. And I need to know him as my shepherd. And I need to know him as my supplier. And I need to know him as my strength and my stay. I just need to know him. I don't need to know about him. I need to know him. Now, do you know him? I'll tell you what it says in this book. The people that do know their God. People that do know their God. They shall be strong and do exploits. And there are people who don't know about them at all. Yes. Want you to get the hold of that. And you'll find this out, that when people just crush them out, and so many other things come in, and they're occupied with them, and they don't know their God in the sense that we're talking this morning, you'll find that these other things accompany this. It says here, God is having to speak to them through the prophet, because there is no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. There is no truth, you see. You see, they couldn't present a message to the nations around them about their God when they don't know their God. If there is no true knowledge of God in your heart, you can't tell other people about Him. There is no truth being radiated. And what you will find in life, that when people get to a place where they're occupied with so many things, and they've lost sight of their God, and they don't know Him in the fashion that we're talking about, and they can't radiate any truth then, you'll find there's no mercy from that crowd. None whatsoever. You blow your nose wrong and they'll tell you about it. And this is where Israel was. They didn't know their God anymore. And there was no truth going out from this nation. In fact, they were bowing down to sticks and stones. And this is where I rubbed it into this old fellow. Because if you go down this chapter, look at verse 17. It says this, Ephraim is joined to idols. Let alone, that was the biggest tribe in the north. Yes, sometimes that northern kingdom was even called Ephraim, and I believe that's what the meaning is here. The whole northern kingdom was joined to idols. Look at verse 12. My people asked counsel at their stocks, and their staff declared unto them. You see, the whole nation had gone into idolatry. They were away from God. You can see the problem that the preacher had. Yes, they were divided among themselves. But to add to that problem, they didn't know their God. There was no truth and there was no mercy. And they were bowing down to sticks and stones. Fancy Israel going back into idolatry. And just think of their homes here for a moment. Look at verse 2. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery. Just go through all the sins they were committing. And they were breaking every sin on the Ten Commandment roll. Can you get the people? And I don't want to wait with the people. You see this day now. You see the prophet's problem. The people are divided. They don't know their God. They've gone back to sticks and stones. You can scarcely believe that. And they're killing. And they're stealing. And they're committing adultery. And sin is rampant in the land. That's the problem. Now, I want you to see the preacher for a moment. Because he was a mighty character. And all the preachers here can learn from him. Go over to chapter 7 to you see. He had a wonderful way of doing things. In chapter 7, he's talking to Ephraim, or talking about Ephraim. He says, verse 8, Ephraim, he hath mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned. That's a mighty little phrase. You know, it shows you just how this prophet got about his work. You see, I think that he had taken note of the woman baking bread. I'm sure all the ladies here know about this baking of bread. And you see, I happen to know almost everything about it. You see, I was brought up, and there were 16 boys in our family. And I was the youngest one, and when I was 10, my mother taught me to bake bread for the rest of them. Now, you wouldn't think that I could bake bread. I know some of you old ladies just think I can eat it, that's all. I'll tell you this, I can bake all kinds of bread. I'm not sure where I could do it now or not. It's a long time since I tried my hand at this. But I used to bake soda bread and wheaten bread and potato oaten and oat cake and all the rest of it. And when you're 16 boys to feed, you need to bake a good wee bit, you know. Just a couple of fowls is no use here. And I can remember as a small boy standing at this baking board we had, and there was the wing of a duck, I think it was, where you scraped up the floor, and my mother would tell me what to do. I would say, now how much baking soda do I put in, and how much buttermilk do I put in, and then I would stir it, and you know, it had to be very delicately lifted and put onto the... We had a griddle in those days, no oven, open fire. Yes, there was a chain and a cleek, we called it, a hook it is. And it was there I baked the bread. And I know about this, you know, when you put the soda fowls on and they're soft, then when it gets a bit of heat, you know, there's one side of it done. And he could see this tribe like this, or maybe this whole northern kingdom like this. There were two sides to this crowd. Or was he trying to say they were half-baked? They were a cake, not turned anyway. They had two faces, that's the bit. This old preacher knew how to get about the thing, you know. He was a good preacher. He got down to talking to them. And sometimes God's people, you know, have two faces. They're very hard to manage them, because they can meet you on the street and talk the language of Canaan. But they can go round the corner and back horses. Yeah. Little fella came to me the other day in this town. Said to me, do you know so-and-so who comes to your meeting? I want to say something about him. I said, you can say something to me about him when you leave the bookies. Because I happen to know he's in the bookies every day. Let's cut that off. That's his two-faced business. How did I know he was in the bookies? That's gone through your mind. One of the detectives that's sitting there told me. He goes in to get news, so he says anyway. Ah, yes. Yes, I believe him. I'm having fun with him, but I believe him. Yeah. This two-faced business won't work. You know, here's this preacher again. See verse 9. We're at chapter 7, verse 9. He says, strangers have devoured his strength, and he knoweth it not. Yea, grey hairs are here and there upon him, yet he knoweth not. You see, he noticed things. This is the angle he preached from. You know, grey hairs come, don't they? And usually, not all the time, not general at all, but usually when grey hairs appear, they're just a sign you're getting older, that's all. And when many of them appear, you're getting further over the hill. And you're not the man you used to be. Now, I know that there are some folks who have a deficiency in their blood and they get gray hair sooner. And we're not talking about that. But you know, for the most of us, when I was a young fella, I had hair once upon a time, you know, whether you believe that or not. And it was jet black, jet black. They used to think I was sort of bred from the gypsies. My brothers used to keep me going, say it was the gypsies that left you behind. But I remember seeing the first grey hair, you know. Remember seeing it in the glass. And I knew about it. And I would brush it in under the black ones and put that over. But there came a day when there were so many of them, there's no use of brushing them at all. The ladies get round to dyeing them now. I'll tell you this, you could tell the dye for a mile away. You know, I can tell it anyways. There's no use. But here was a people. And they were losing out with God. And their strength was going. And they didn't know it. That's what he was saying. And to say, you know, you're fooling yourself. You don't even know that you're away from God. That's the sort of thing he was saying. Here's another thing that he noticed. See verse 11. He says, Ephraim also is like a silly dove. Now, that's a great little phrase he used. And the adjective there is a very wonderful one. Silly. You know, the dove, it deserves this word. The folk who know almost everything about birds, old Dr. McCafferty knows almost everything about birds. He and I were talking the other day. And you know, the only bird of flight, so I'm told, that will not try to escape if a net is put up there, if it's flying along, the only bird of flight that will not try to escape is the dove. Every other bird will come along, and in the last second, it may not get out of it, but in the last second it will make an attempt, and not the dove, it just flies into the net. It's called the silly dove. And God's people are like this sometimes, so the prophet said. You know, the devil can put a net up, just bang into it. He could see the crowd, you know. So you see, the prophet was a good old preacher and knew how to go about the job and what to say to the people. But you know, when Dr. Campbell Morgan, who was perhaps one of the greatest preachers this world has ever seen, and I believe that with all my heart. I got rebuked for saying that once, but I've said it every time since, because I believe it. You just listen to some of old doctor's sermons, and I'll tell you they would thrill your soul. When he penned a book on the prophet Hosea, he took all the chapters and penned the book, he called it the heart of God. He maintained that in this book and through this prophet at this particular period, working with this people under these tremendous difficulties, that the heart of God was revealed. And I believe he was right. I believe old Morgan was right. But here's what God did. He let the prophet loose among them. And the prophet knew how to talk to them. But then one day God said to the prophet, he said this. Now watch this very carefully. This is chapter 11. Getting through this book, I don't know why God changed this, but it's going all right, and now I know it was the Lord. This is what he said to the prophet. This is God talking to the prophet now. In verse 1, he said, when Israel was a child, then I loved him. You know, God set his heart upon him. And I'll tell you this, God never changed it. And I'll tell you, to this very moment, God hasn't changed it. God loves Israel. You know, we were singing this morning, love with everlasting love and led by grace, I'd love to know. You see, first of all, he brings out this figure of a father's love, this unchanging love. He said, when Israel was a child, then I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. That's a mighty phrase. And the true interpretation is that God set his love upon this little miserable nation of slaves in Egypt and loved them and called them out. I know there's an application made from this interpretation when he called his son out of Egypt. It's just application. Yes, his son was down there and he called him out, and this very phrase is used. I'll tell you this, that one of these nights the Lord is going to come to the sky and call us out of Egypt, and he'll be calling his son out of Egypt. And that'll be another application. That'll be the last one. Look at verse 3. There are so many I's here. I think there are 16 of them. He says, I taught Ephraim also to go, taking them by their arms. You see, the first verse is the figure of a father's love. And the third verse is the figure of a mother's care. See, the wee one, learn him to walk. We have a wee one at home. He could go about now very well. But when he was learning, you see, you would hold him here. Hold him by the arms. And his mummy would go over there. And she'd say, come on, come on. Hold something up for him. And he'd make a stammer at it, you know. Not too steady. But you know, whoever is holding holds on to his arm. You know, when I first got saved, poor old drunkard with no shoes on, the Lord must have held me by the arms for a whole lot of days. I'll tell you this, he has never forgotten about it. Maybe I've grown into a big boy, but he hasn't forgotten about it. He says to the prophet, listen, I loved them. You know, I took them by the arms. It was me that taught them to go. It's God that's talking with a psalm in his voice now. I'm trying to get this. What's this again? He says, I taught Ephraim also to go, taking them by their arms. But they knew not that I healed them. Ah, this is the figure of a doctor's skill. Jesus, I didn't only love them, you know. I didn't only teach them to walk, I healed them. Ah, this is our God, isn't it? See, verse 4, I drew them with cords of a man with bands of love. You can see the father's love. You can see the mother's care. You can see the surgeon's skill. Watch this one. And I was to them as they that take off the yoke on their jaws, and I laid meat unto them. You know, this is the herdsman. And at the end of the day, when the two oxen have come in tired, he gets in between them and he takes the heavy yoke off. And they're glad to get it off. And he takes it away and he lays meat to them. Sure, this has been our God all along. I hope he lifts old Gregson's burden today and feeds him. Yes. Let's get a look at our God for a moment or two. Just sit there. No matter what you have done or what you have been or what you have said or what can be laid to your charge, let me get over to you. God loves you. And he did care for you, you know. When you didn't know the way to put one foot by another. And he did heal your scars, you know. And he lifted your burdens. And he has fed you all along. Now watch this. You go down the chapter a bit, and here's God talking. Verse 8. How shall I give thee up, Ephraim? How shall I deliver thee, Israel? How shall I make thee as Admah? How shall I set thee as Sebom? You know what Admah and Sebom mean? Well, these were two of the cities of the plain, destroyed with Sodom and Gomorrah. Four cities were destroyed. Sodom, Gomorrah, Sebom, and Admah. He says, now, how shall I give thee up into the judgment like that? How shall I deliver you into the fire? How shall I make thee as Admah? How shall I set thee as Sebom? Here, watch this word. My heart is turned within me. Oh, what a God we have. You wouldn't believe that, would you? Think the God that sits in the heavens on the throne. I sometimes try and see God, and I'm sure I can't do it. But I know the Almighty is there. And I know I can see the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Sometimes his heart is moved for us. You believe that? Yes, he is. Watch this again. He says, my heart is turned within me. My repentings are kindled together. Listen to this. I will not execute the fierceness of mine anger. I should hit you hard, but I'm not going to do it. I will not execute the fierceness of my anger. I will not return to destroy Ephraim. Here's the whole bit of it. For I am God and not man. You know, I have said this 1,000 times to myself. If you worked for man the way you worked for God, you'd be set long ago. He threw you out of the gate. Doesn't you know? He loves you. He remembers you when you were a kid. He wants you for himself. He never destroys you. See the prodigal lifting everything he can lift and getting out and not even looking back as he goes over the hill. Wee rascal. See him spending it all in riotous living, never thinking about the old man at home. See him at last at this Wintrow. Beat now. The world's no good. Penniless and helpless and friendless. And then he turns for home. Here's the bit in the story of the prodigal that amazes me. His father saw him a great way off and ran to meet him. That's the bit. Oh, what a God. What a God. That's our God. That's your God. How good is the God we adore. That's our God. Shouldn't we love God? We should love God with every fiber of our being. How good is the God we adore, our faithful, unchangeable friend, whose love is as great as his power, knows neither measure nor end. Start and love them back, would you? God bless you.